a major settlement over earplugs used by U.S. service members, and how the military prepared ahead of Hurricane Idalia. All of that and more today, August 30th, 2023. Good morning, early birds. I'm Jonathan Lehrfeld, and this is the Early Bird Brief, produced by Defense News and Military Times. The Navy evacuated ships and aircraft based in Florida ahead of Hurricane Idalia. Forecasters expected the storm could intensify to a Category 3 overnight before making landfall in Florida today. At a White House briefing, FEMA Administrator Deanne Criswell said she and President Biden have spoken with Florida Governor Ron DeSantis and are assisting with the hurricane help.
FEMA and the entire federal family are activated to support the people of Florida. The president also quickly approved an emergency declaration in advance of the storm in Florida, turning on the many tools that are available at my disposal to provide the governor any support or resources he may need in advance of landfall and then after.
The Navy said it started moving ships from Naval Station Mayport on Monday. The service also said steps would be taken to protect ships remaining in port and aircraft that were not evacuated. A spokesperson said the measures are precautionary and designed to minimize the risk of damage. Also this week, the commander of MacDill Air Force Base in Tampa ordered a mandatory evacuation of families and non-essential staff ahead of the storm's anticipated landfall. The installation is home to U.S. Central Command and U.S. Special Operations Command. Veterans Affairs officials also moved some patients out of potential impact areas. Some VA clinics are also closed until after the storm moves through. The agency also sent warnings to other veterans about the potential of the storm's impact on VA services in the coming days. VA Secretary Dennis McDonough urged veterans in the area to follow orders of local leaders and to stay in touch with the VA to make sure their medical care and benefits are not disrupted. Southwest Florida is still recovering from Hurricane Ian in 2022. Ian was responsible for almost 150 deaths and damaged tens of thousands of structures. Another important story, chemical and consumer product manufacturer 3M agreed to pay $6 billion to settle numerous lawsuits surrounding some of its earplugs. U.S. service members filed the lawsuits, saying they experienced hearing loss or other serious injuries after using faulty earplugs made by the company. The settlement consists of $5 billion in cash and $1 billion in 3M stock. It will be made in payments that will run through 2029. The agreement, announced yesterday, marks a resolution to one of the largest mass torts in U.S. history. Hundreds of thousands of veterans and current service members have reportedly sued 3M and Aero Technologies over their combat arms earplug products. 3M acquired Aero Technologies in 2008. The products were intended to protect ears from close-range firearms and other loud noises. But according to one of the law firms representing plaintiffs, the service members alleged that a defective design allowed them to loosen slightly and allowed hearing damage. In an online summary about the combat arms earplug litigation, the Florida-based law firm notes that 3M previously agreed to pay $9.1 million to settle a lawsuit on behalf of the government alleging the company knowingly supplied defective earplugs to the U.S. military. Since 2019, the firm added, 3M has lost 10 of 16 cases that have gone to trial, awarding millions of dollars to plaintiffs to date. In a statement to Bloomberg and other news outlets, one of the attorneys representing the plaintiffs called the settlement a historic agreement. The agreement includes all claims in Florida's multi-district litigation, coordinated state court action in Minnesota, and potential future claims. In yesterday's announcement, 3M maintained the agreement was not an admission of liability. 3M has previously tried to reduce exposure to the earplug litigation through bankruptcy court. In 2022, Aero filed for bankruptcy as a separate company, accepting responsibility for claims, but the filing was later dismissed in U.S. bankruptcy court. An important note, the agreement hasn't been finalized yet. Last month, 22 attorneys general urged a federal court to reject the proposed settlement, saying it lets 3M off too easily. Beyond the earplug litigation, 3M in June agreed to pay at least $10.3 billion to settle lawsuits over contamination of many U.S. public drinking water systems with potentially harmful compounds. The deal, would compensate water providers for pollution with per- and polyfluorinated substances, also known as forever chemicals. In other news, a Texas National Guardsman recently shot into Mexico, wounding a man. For more on this cross-border incident, Army Times senior reporter Davis Winky joins the episode today. So tell us about the incident involving a Texas National Guardsman at the southern border and why he was at the border in the first place. What happened?
For about 2.5 years now, the state of Texas has had National Guard troops deployed to its border with Mexico in an effort to help stem human trafficking, drug trafficking, and other problems that have been occurring there. As that mission has expanded over time, there have been a number of issues, the most recent of which occurred on Saturday evening when an on-duty Texas National Guard member in El Paso apparently fired his service weapon across the border and hit a man on the Mexican side of the river in Ciudad Juarez. There's a lot that isn't clear about this incident. What we found in the Mexican media was that the man who was injured was shot in the leg and that he initially told authorities that he was trying to cross, but he later changed his story to say that he was playing sports by the river. The U.S. authorities have been largely quiet thus far about what they believe occurred. They've just more or less confirmed that somebody fired their weapon, and there hasn't been a lot of detail. I will add, though, that the Washington Post cited an anonymous Customs and Border Protection official saying that the guardsman believed the man was trying to stab somebody in a group of migrants that was crossing. But that same official who was speaking on condition of anonymity said that they'd only been briefed on it, that the details were hazy, and nobody on the American side has stepped forward yet to offer an explanation to compete with that of the man who was shot.
Have Mexican officials responded at all over the incident?
It very well could be an international incident. It's one of those things that folks who have been watching this border mission, which is being done under state authority rather than federal authority, folks who have been watching it have warned that this could be something that would happen, a potential international incident or a use of force crossing the border. And here we are. The Dallas Morning News reported that Mexico's top diplomat has requested a full investigation by the Texas Department of Public Safety into this incident. What I will add, though, is Texas DPS, whose investigative arm is the Texas Rangers, is not an independent party here. The entirety of Operation Lone Star is being done as a joint mission between Texas DPS and the Texas National Guard. DPS has handled investigations into other shootings by Texas Guardsmen over the past couple of years, and there have been competing narratives of how they occurred. And although the Mexicans want to see this investigation, I think there's reason to, keep a close eye on it as more details start to emerge.
This isn't the first time that Texas Governor Greg Abbott has come under scrutiny for Operation Lone Star. Could you tell us what exactly he has been scrutinized for and what his response has been?
In the fall of 2021, when the border mission expanded, critics pointed out that it coincided with a time in the Texas gubernatorial primary that Abbott was facing pressure from the right to step up his response to the border. And around that time, they expanded the mission by thousands of troops who were involuntarily activated on very short notice. And when they arrived at the border, there were pretty widespread issues with pay, living conditions, equipment. Those issues largely improved over time, and we detailed them in collaboration with our colleagues at the Texas Tribune over the course of a long-term investigative partnership. But they haven't completely gone away, and we keep running into new or related problems or even recurring problems with the border mission that unavoidably stem from the fact that these are guardsmen on state orders under state authority along a border that is primarily patrolled by the federal government on a day-to-day basis. And Abbott has faced criticism for that, and Abbott's administration has been sued by the Justice Department for some of its efforts that it's done as part of this border mission. Even last spring, Abbott and his administration had to remove top generals in the Texas Military Department in March of 2022 amid the criticism of the way the mission was designed and executed. So it's just the latest headline in what has been a seeming parade of tough press for the state of Texas on this mission.
Thanks, Davis. If you liked our conversation today, please like and rate us wherever you get your podcasts. Also, be sure to listen on Tuesday. Davis will join us again to discuss an 18-month investigation with the Texas Tribune that revealed how a group of intelligence officers from the Texas National Guard allegedly mishandled classified information and used WhatsApp to spy on migrants in Mexico. Also on the radar for today, a new think tank report found that Air Force eligibility rules are disproportionately keeping Black and Hispanic Americans out of uniform. The department's eligibility requirements are designed to allow America's finest and fittest youth into the military. The federally funded think tank Rand Corp published the paper earlier this month. It adds to a growing body of research on diversity in the military. Rand researchers found that even as the Pentagon looks to boost recruitment and increase equity within its ranks, the Air Force's rules for entry could hobble those efforts. Researchers said Black men comprise 7% of the enlistment age population. That's individuals 17 to 39 years old. But only 3.6% of them are otherwise eligible to join the Air Force. And while that age range includes 12% of Hispanic men, just 7% of them meet the department's other standards for health, education, citizenship, criminal records, tattoos, and more. Similar trends hold for the opposite sex. Black women comprise 7% of Americans who are old enough to join the Air Force, but less than 5% are otherwise eligible to enlist. Hispanic women make up more than 10% of the age-eligible pool of prospective enlistees, but that falls to 8% when considering other eligibility requirements. Similar disparities affect Black and Hispanic Americans looking to join the officer corps, which requires a college degree and skews more white and more male than on the enlisted side. According to Rand, the biggest hurdle to enlistment for those demographics are the Air Force's education and testing requirements. The Air Force has tweaked some recruitment rules to cast a wider net, such as allowing people to join with higher body fat percentages and some hand and neck tattoos. It can also issue waivers to prospects who fail to meet certain standards and help prospective airmen study before they take their entrance tests. When Air Force data is compared to U.S. Census information, there is a slightly higher percentage of Black people in active duty with the Air Force and Space Forces than in the overall population. But the same sets of data show that Hispanics or Latinos are slightly underrepresented in the active duty Air and Space Forces. The authors of the report said attracting a diverse pool of new troops would be good for the health of the military. That's echoed by military officials who insist recruiting troops of different races, ethnicities, and genders is important to national security. And now, here are some other stories that we're hearing chirps about. The Navy announced this week that Rear Admiral Fred Kacher became acting superintendent of the U.S. Naval Academy. His nomination to become commander of U.S. 7th Fleet has been delayed by a Senate hold on military confirmations. The Pentagon committed this week to fielding thousands of autonomous systems across multiple domains within the next 2 years as part of a new initiative to better compete with China. And the Russian mercenary leader Yevgeny Prigozhin was remembered at a private burial yesterday. The Kremlin said President Vladimir Putin would not attend the service. And on this day in history, in 2021, the last U.S. troops left Afghanistan, ending America's longest war. That's it for us this morning. To get more of the top stories and breaking news, go to defensenews.com/EBB to subscribe to the Early Bird Brief newsletter. Please give us a like, rating, and a comment wherever you get your podcasts. And be sure to follow us on social media at @defense_news and @MilitaryTimes. The Early Bird Brief is hosted by me, Jonathan Lehrfeld, and produced by Zimone Z. Perez. Today's episode features stories by Diana Stancy, Leo Shane III, The Associated Press, Davis Winkie, The Texas Tribune, and Jaime Morcarillo. Our editor-in-chief is Mike Gruss. Have a great day.